Welcome to the Arts and Antique Radio Show, where your host, nationally recognized certified appraiser Elizabeth Stewart, Santa Barbara's treasure sleuth, will help you put a value on the treasures in your own home.
Every time it rains, pennies from heaven. Don't you know each cloud contains pennies from heaven?
So let's find out. How valuable is it?
Hello, Santa Barbara. It's your chanteress of everything valuable and beautiful, Elizabeth Stewart. And I've got somebody that I've actually liked for many, many years. Her artwork is really interesting. And she's showing at the Architectural Foundation Gallery. This is Holly Hungett. And her show is Saturday, April 22nd. Onwards, and that's the opening. And her show is called Natural Interpretations. Natural Interpretations, the show itself is going to run till May 20th. So you'll be able to see Holly's work at the foundation, at the Architectural Foundation Gallery. By the way, if you haven't been to the gallery, it is a gem. It's in an old home. I think the house was built in 1909, something like that. It's at the corner of Victoria and what is it? Victorian at the is it
Garden? Garden.
A garden, garden in Victoria. Thank you. And it's just a beautiful little space. It's got the feel of an eerie older home, and they've turned the gallery into some beautiful little white space with a lot of windows. And I think this is just going to be perfect for Holly's work. And Holly, are you with us?
Yes, hi.
Okay, there's Holly, and she can hear us. And we're also joined by Julia Rutherford Daly. Is it Daly?
Yes, Daly. Good morning, Daly. Everyone.
Okay, and she is actually coming to us because she's very well connected with the Architectural Foundation Gallery, and she also has previously served as curator for the Santa Barbara County Office of Art and Culture. And she's got a lot of art administration experience. So just a little bit about Julia. She's currently with Chandra Cerrito Art Advisors. And like I said, she was curator for Santa Barbara County Office of Arts and Culture. She spent a combined 6 years at Santa Barbara Museum of Art, and in which she was annual fund manager, lead curator of Ray Strong. I love that show, Beyond Santa Barbara. Internationally, she held a position with Gallery Senda in Barcelona. She has a BA in Art History and Spanish from the University of California at Santa Barbara and an MA from the University of Southern California in Art and Curatorial Practices. In graduate studies, she worked at the Hammer Museums as Chief Curator Connie Butler, and she supported, I was also at this show, the 2014 Made in LA Biennale. How cool is that? So we've never met, but I've seen her work, which is pretty cool, Julia. And so I wonder, can you tell us a little bit about Holly's work, what it is to you?
Yes. So I'm really interested in Holly's notion of slowing down and the viewer taking a moment to come closer to these smaller works that really kind of provide a moment of respite from our overstimulated world. And so for me, I really think it's interesting how her limited palettes really are a stark contrast from what we're constantly connected to every day. So everybody, most everybody is on their iPhone with the blue light and the bright lights and it just, I love how her work not only is drawn from nature and literally she starts her process in nature, but it also is a break from our kind of where we are in society today with our connection to technology every day. So yeah, I can start with that. And hand it back over.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah, I agree with you. And Richard, Richard, are you there?
Yes, Elizabeth, I am here.
Okay, so I've never thought about this. I could kick myself. Have you thought about this? And you probably have, but I've never thought about what Julia just said, that basically technology has a different kind of light. So it's a blue light.
Yes. As a matter of fact, when you're talking about screens, yes. And there is a feature in most phones, which I use, by the way, that puts a brown tint, very faint, but it's there. I can tell the difference in the screen, so that that blue light, which interferes with your ability, this is what I understand, to sleep, to rest, and so forth, it interferes with that so that you can sleep, you can rest, you know, that blue does not impact you. Is that a fair assessment, Julia?
Yeah, I'm not super familiar with blue light, but I think what really kind of interests me is thinking about how our phones, again, they have not only the bright lights, but the notifications. I've heard that the red number next to your unread emails, that actually triggers a kind of emergency response in your brain to respond, kind of a fight or flight type of response.
Those were the words I was thinking of.
Exactly. And so what I love about Holly's work is that it really, not only is it acrylic and gouache works, but it is the muted palettes, the limited palettes. She really pares down the composition. So it's kind of a less is more type of thing. And the smaller works, it's not bigger is better, but kind of a smaller work really draws the viewer in to just take a moment to hopefully unplug from their phone for a moment and take a break from our overstimulated society.
So interesting, because I was listening to NPR, they're interviewing an author, and he was talking about the experience of childhood and why he wanted to cast one of his characters as a young teen, because he identified so strongly with those years. And he said, I wanted to put him in 1995, before every young teen was attached permanently to their phone. And the reason being is I wanted a clear view of what it was like to be a 13, 14-year-old boy without the phone. And I was like, my gosh, you got to go. That's how it surgically removed the phone so from the story, from the narrative, so he could get to the character himself. That surprised me to hear that. But Holly, I want you to explain something to me. Are you hearing what we're talking about regards Julia's statement about how the impact of the phone and the light that the phone and all technology gives off is that your work is in some way an antidote to this? Can you speak to that?
I hadn't thought of it as antidote to that particularly. Several people have mentioned that to me. But I do agree that, you know, it's like we're always on our phones and checking email or checking Instagram or Facebook or, you know, doing something like that. And my feeling is just like the world itself, even beyond technology, I mean, the technical like iPhones or phones and so forth, the world itself is moving so fast. You know, we're always rushing to the next appointment it's like, I want to see a friend, but I only have an hour. So I have to, you know, make an appointment with her and then have lunch with someone else. And, you know, our life is just so, we're like, what's that, you know, fear of missing out. We always want to like always have everything. And so I feel like for me being in nature and also the paintings are like offering people like, instead of rushing to that next thing, you know, they're small. I think of small painting as being intimate, more intimate. Like if you have an intimate conversation with someone, you get close to them, right? You don't stand 10 feet away. So that's what I want my paintings to do. I want them to draw people close, to have that intimate. And so, you know, the details, the subtleties of the color, part of the reason is that it'll draw people close and they'll have something to look at that's more subtle and that will maybe help them like, oh, you know, here's a design from a distance, but when I get close, I see these subtle changes. And So a little different than the technological aspect, but I do agree with that. But in thinking of it, it was more just our overstimulated world from rushing and, you know, even reading the newspaper. And there's so much, you know, there's so much going on. The world has gotten so small. We know everything about everywhere, but we don't know what's going on in our backyard.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Yeah, that's it's. And I want you to, I've got two main questions for you. And Richard's giving us the sign we're going to go to quick break. But I love, I went to your website last night and took a really good look. And I want you to talk about, and as you have been talking about, the mini paintings that you do. I'd like for you to talk about the inspiration behind that when we get back from the break. And also, I'd like for you to reflect on for us your interest in Picasso, in which your opening quote on your website is, "Art is the elimination of the unnecessary." I was struck by that. Yeah, and I want you to reflect on that a little bit. Richard, let's go to a quick break. And I just want to reintroduce, I am speaking with somebody that I've really admired for a long time, Holly Hungett, and she will be showing at the Architectural Foundation Gallery. It comes to the opening Saturday, April 22nd from 1 to 3.
No. Will be there. No, I'm sorry. There's no more openings. We're already into May.
Oh, okay. Oh, of course. I don't know. I'm just reading this.
Yeah.
Okay. So natural interpretation runs May 20th. Till that time, I apologize, Holly. And Holly will actually answer a couple of questions for me when we get back from the break. These are some of the things I want to talk about. The mini paintings, the idea of this quote, "Art is the elimination of the unnecessary." And then I'd also like to talk about how yoga and movement for the past 25 years, how that has refined your artistic sensibilities, Holly. Those are the three topics I'd like for us to discuss, and Julia will help me too when we get back from the break. So Richard, let's go to quick break. Back in a minute. Okay. Stuart, I'm talking with somebody that I've actually followed for a while, and Holly Hungett, and also helping me with the interview is Julia Rutherford Daly. And turns out that our paths have crossed before, because my good friend and absolutely talented counterculture, wonderful person in the Nancy Gifford, Julia Rutherford Daly curated Wit and Whimsy, and I remember that show, and Nancy was, I think she had already moved to Arizona at the time, Julia?
Yeah. I think she had just moved, but I do remember she made the opening reception, and which was just so wonderful, kind of before everything shut down, so.
That's right. It was right before COVID started, and yeah, thank God that Nancy had the opportunity to do that. That's fantastic. We still email every so often. I just follow her, and I wish that she'd come back or have. I said to her, "You should have like a little pied-à-terre here in Santa Barbara because you've got such good friends here." I hope that for her one day. Anyway, we were talking to Holly Hungett about the connection she has with this quote: "Art is the elimination of the unnecessary." Pablo Picasso. Quote. Holly, can you speak to that?
Well, I just love that idea of elimination of the unnecessary. It sort of goes along with the idea of yoga, you know, letting go of the things that, you know, the chaos in our life for me. I mean, Picasso was a master of that. He pared down his images. I mean, not all of them, but I'm thinking of a lot of his figures, you know, to just very basic forms. And I like that feeling of just eliminating what is unnecessary. I wish I could do it more in my life. I do it more in my artwork, but less in my life.
Yeah, because it feels like everything's so necessary. You know, have you ever seen that grid? It's four squares, and one is, you know, immediate, have to do, must do, incredibly important. And you can connect these in various ways. And it turns out that if you do that for all the experiences that you're going through in your life, you know, a good 3/4 of them don't measure up to actually doing much about, you know, letting it go, as you say.
Right. You know? Yeah, it is. It's hard to know what's important. You know, not everything is important. And so how do we decipher what is important? And, you know, when I go out to paint, I'm looking, I mean, there's so much detail, it is overwhelming. So I'm trying to look at what's important to me.
So how do you manage that? Because you've been married, gosh, a long time. You moved to Goleta in 1986. So,
right.
You know, 35 plus years. How long have you been with your husband?
Well, 37 years. We'll be celebrating shortly.
Aww. Okay. So, congratulations on that. But the issue is where I was going with that is, how do you determine, like you were saying, so many things in our lives are just not that important. But to other people, like a close partner, like your husband of almost 40 years, maybe certain things are important to him. I mean, that's always my conflict is, okay, I can ferret out the things in my life that I think are not important. But then other people might say, well, okay, but this was important to me. And now, you know, you're not providing that, or it's not in your scope of reference. How do you make that work with a partner for so long? I mean, that's 40 years almost.
I didn't know this was going to be a marriage talk. You know, I think that we're both very much very accepting of what the other person is doing. I mean, one thing is that Peter hasn't tried to change me, and I don't try to change him. So I think that's a lot of the conflict that happens is like you want the other person to fit your idea. I mean, not that he, you know, not that we don't have conflict, but I heard some spiritual teachers say you can't bake someone else's cake. You have to let them bake their own cake. I like that. It's like they have to bake their own life. You know, I have to bake my own life the way I think of it. You could offer suggestions, but you can't bake someone else's cake.
And what does he think about your art?
What?
What does he think about your art?
Oh, he's very supportive. I wouldn't be doing this if he wasn't, you know, if I had conflict. We live in a small condo, and I've taken over the kitchen, the dining room table. He's been, you know, very supportive of me working and painting and showing my work. And he helps me with the framing and often gives me some really good advice if I ask him, what do you think about this? And he's got a really good eye. He's not trained as an artist, but he's got a really good eye for details. And so there's maybe something in my painting that I didn't know. He says, you know, this part doesn't work. He'll just say that. And I'll take it with a grain of salt. Sometimes I'll change it. And sometimes I'll think, well, it does work for me. So
what does he do when you go out on your long hikes to paint?
Well, he's retired. He's got his own life. We have a little garden here. He loves gardening, and he goes on his own walks, or he loves to read.
My point is, he doesn't come with you.
Oh no, sorry, no. Sometimes we'll, like, if we go on vacation and we'll go out someplace and I'll sketch or I'll paint, but usually he doesn't come. I usually go out with art friends and to paint.
Well, I love that. I think that's great. I think that's fantastic. It was just interesting to me when we're talking about eliminating the unnecessary, how that works when it's a close relationship of that many years with you and your husband. That was just an interesting explanation that, you're baking your own cake. That's the way it goes.
Right.
So, Richard, let's go to a quick break. Go ahead, Holly. Go ahead.
No, I just said I like that that concept. You have to bake your own cake.
Okay, I do too. Okay, so let's go to a quick break. And I want to know a little bit more about this idea of movement and how movement has helped you. When we get back from the break, Holly, I want to know more about your connection, the kinetic connection that you have, and how that's influenced your art. Richard, let's go to a quick break. It's Elizabeth Sturt and a very interesting conversation with Holly Hungett, who has been painting for years, and she's doing a show right now, which is up at the Architectural Foundation Gallery. May 20th, it closes. So we have some time to, we have 15 days to go and see Holly at that, Holly's work at the Architectural Foundation Gallery, Victoria and Garden Street, right at the corner there, that beautiful old house. And we're talking about Julia, of course, when all great things are said during the break, Julia brought up a really interesting observation and asked Holly, our artist of the day today, did you know that it was Pablo Picasso's 50th anniversary of his death? And we started to think about this idea of, do you look at the artist as a person, or do you, do the personal experiences, for example, I'm asking Holly, how does yoga influence your life? How does movement influence your art? So I'm thinking about her biographical, her narrative details of her life to help me understand her work better. And on the other hand, maybe I shouldn't be doing that, Holly. Maybe I should just be looking at your work and just saying, well, here's what Holly's work says to me. Well, how do you stand on this question, Holly?
Well, I think the work needs to stand on its own, for sure. I mean, just my background is that I've, since the early 90s, I've taught and practiced yoga. And so that has to influence me. I mean, because it's been such a part of my life, a big part of my life. But I think the work needs to stand on its own. That thought may give you some insight about my work, but I think the work, whatever needs to stand as on its own as a strong piece. And then I think the narrative of the person adds to that. person. That's, you know, I mean, when I look at work, I don't think, oh, I love that work because that person is, you know, a sailor or had done sailing or, you know, something like that. The work is what strikes me first. And then if I'm interested, I learn about the person behind it. And I hope that happens too for people. Like the work would, you know, be inspirational for them to look at, and then they might want to learn about who I am behind that.
And then we have to draw the line at some point, because, you know, I've actually been a number of times to Art Basel in Miami Beach because I've got a client who likes me to go and I buy for that family. And you can see, you know, they're little booths and quite large booths, very lavish. You know, people, galleries are representing an artist and hanging the artist's work. And you see the artist out front being a big celebrity. And you think to yourself, well, this is, you know, I mean, you're selling yourself. You're not necessarily selling your work. But in this era of celebrity everything, logo everything, right, of course they're selling themselves. Of course they're selling themselves. You know, how did I expect that it would just be us looking at the work when there's this, you know, art star sitting out in front of their booth? Well, people pay attention to celebrity. People pay attention to biography. They do. I had this phone call, Holly, yesterday. Very interesting. Somebody had a painting that they bought in Hawaii. And I won't tell you the artist, but you probably know. Do you remember back in the 80s, you could go to Hawaii and you could buy these very colorful, like under the water kind of scenes where there's fish and, you know, sharks. Yeah. And you know, the big hotels would have a gallery of this certain artist that did this, you know, beautiful, at that time considered beautiful, under the water and surf related and ocean related and this sort of thing. Well, they went the way of all kind of commercial artists, and they started to do a number of, you know, they did originals, but then they did prints and G. Clay's and this particular artist I'm talking about. And this older gentleman had bought in the 70s one of the original pieces. And he called me and he said, you know, I need to know what it's worth today. Can I hire you to do an appraisal? Because I want to leave this to my children. And I tell my children that when they inherit it, if they want to sell it, they can probably buy 7 Teslas.
Wow.
And I said, okay. So I said, okay, well, let me look into it. And I said, you know, well, and what did you spend on the original in 1970 something? Well, I gave him, it's a small piece, and I gave the artist $2,000 at the time. I said, well, that's what it's probably worth now if you were to sell it at auction, because that work is not in favor right now. And he said, what? I can't believe it. Art doesn't necessarily go up in value. I said, not necessarily. And he said, why? And I said, well, the artist got into some major trouble. You know, the artist, so many greats, Picasso, for example, Mozart, for example, their personality is such that you can't ignore their personality. This artist had a little bit of a problem with the law regarding a girlfriend. And he ended up in jail, and, you know, he was very discredited, this sort of thing. He said, look, I don't care about that. I only care that this is a beautiful piece. And I said, I know, but then there's a relationship to the market and the value and the personality because of the fact we are in this celebrity culture.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. I mean, that's interesting, you know, but, I think that was one reason why I didn't pursue art after I graduated from school, from my MFA, because I was taught that you had to really become a personality in the galleries. And I was very shy. Yoga really helped me. I mean, you think of yoga as going inward, but yoga helped me kind of overcome shyness. But when I graduated from school, they were like, if you want to make it as an artist, unless you know, if you want to go into galleries, you have to really be able to schmooze and, you know, have a personality and sell yourself. And I was like, there's no way I could do that. So that sort of there was a roadblock for me personally. But I think that's true. That's what I hear, like on different artist network, you know, sell your story, because that makes people want to buy your work.
And what do you think about that?
I don't know. I guess I don't feel like I have a big story to sell. So that confuses me. I don't know what, you know, I mean, I have my life story, but I don't think it's worthy of a novel where, you know, some artists write a lot about their, it's not that I don't have, you know, ups and downs in my art, but a lot of artists that I see that in this one situation, you know, they write about, oh, they're having a hard day, or they're having a good day, or, you know, they write a lot more personal messages with their art. And I'm more of a person, a private person. So, you know, that's not something I would naturally do. And I don't feel comfortable like forcing that out, you know, forcing myself to. I'm more of an introverted person than, I'm not totally introverted, but I'm on the introverted side of that scale.
Okay, so now, Julia, I'd like to hear your opinion on this point, which is, yeah. You know, you work for an art advisory business, and you're advising people, you know, looking at art, how to actually see rather than just look. And when we get back from the break, I want you to talk about this question that we've discovered. So it's the dichotomy. We were talking about inward, outward. So Holly's work, very work that is more on the end of elimination of the unnecessary than adding to the composition. And her life, it seems, is also about simplification. And she's learned that through her training of 25 plus years in the yoga. And so what I'm digging for is, you know, where is Holly in the art? And Holly's saying, well, I'm there, but I'm kind of not there. So I want to know what you feel about that in terms of, you know, your background. Hey, Richard.
Yes, Elizabeth.
Let's go to a quick break. When we get back from the break, I really love that. It's funny that we happened upon this topic, because Holly's work is a great platform for this question, which is how far do you go as a person into the work? And how far do we as the observers understand that we're looking at something that is the product of a creator that has a real life narrative? How much should that life narrative matter? This whole question has been brought up because Julia responded to a quote that's at the very beginning of Holly's website, Art is the Elimination of the Unnecessary by Pablo Picasso. And Julia said, hey, but did you know it's the 50th anniversary of Picasso's death? And I said, yes, I do, because I've been following a lot of the panels that a lot of museums have mounted. The question is, do we teach our students to look at the Picasso, the man, and therefore inform his work? Or do we look at just the work? So we have a polar opposite. And I was interested to know what Holly thought about it, which we found out. Now we're going to find out what Julia thinks about it. We go to quick break. Don't turn that down. Back, it's Elizabeth Stewart, and we're talking with Holly Hungen. She has a show hanging right now at the Architectural Foundation Gallery, corner of Victorian Garden Street. It's running till May 20th, 2023, and I really like her work. I've seen her work in many other places and group shows, and when she had her solo show here, I wanted to talk with her. And we're helped in the conversation by Julia Rutherford Daly, who's had a number of positions that, not the least of which is curator for the Santa Barbara County Office of Arts and Culture. She is presently with Chandra Cerrito Art Advisors. And we started to talk about how much Holly is in her work and what the elimination of the unnecessary in her work means. Does it mean that she eliminates her own personal backstory in the work or not? And Julia, I'm interested to know what Julia has to say about this, because she's currently has a position as an art advisor for Chandra Cerrito. So what do you think about this question, Julia?
Yeah, so I was just thinking about how we're talking about, I think Holly mentioned when she was at school, you did your undergrad at UC Santa Barbara, right, Holly?
No, I did my master's degree.
Oh, your master's. Okay. Yeah. So your master's at, and was that in the 80s? I think you mentioned.
Yeah. 87.
So Holly, 87. Holly mentioned how the artists were also kind of encouraged to, if they wanted to make it in the gallery world, to kind of be a persona and show themselves and really kind of be a persona outside of their art. I think it's interesting to think about in that day and age, likely an artist not only would maybe learn to schmooze at receptions and that sort of thing, but they'd have a physical artist portfolio that if someone was interested in their work, that would be the way they would present them, their work and their practice. And now I find it's really interesting because the rise of social media, I would say most artists that I talk to in today's age have an Instagram account. Younger artists may be engaged with Instagram with, their friends and whatnot. But artists of all ages are on it as a platform to not only show their work, it is a platform to show their work, but also to really kind of get attention, get media, get recognized, show their work, show off their work, I guess. And so I think what I'm thinking about right now is just how social media does kind of play an interesting role in what, do these artists have professional accounts that are just their artwork, or are they also inserting their persona into that as well? I would argue that a lot of artists likely are inserting some of their persona and their personality into how they present their work, how they're posting their work.
Uh-oh, I lost you.
And how to get their work out there and stuff. And it's just interesting that it's not just a physical portfolio anymore. There are so many different ways that's needed these days. Also having a website and having, that digital platform for your work. So just something I'm thinking about through our different conversations today.
I was approached by Bay a few years ago because she said, I've been watching your Instagram page and I want to know if you want to show at the Architectural Foundation. So, and I've got another situation where someone was looking at my page. I usually work small, but there's this program called Art for the Seventh Generation, and it's a mural of not the whole mural, but the mural is a 1 mile long of these different panels, 4x8 panels of the coast from Mexico border to Canada border. And someone saw my Instagram page and said, would you consider submitting a piece for this? They call it a panel mural. So it's up in Oregon as a, so the Instagram page has been, a good way for me to have a public persona without being out physically in front of people.
On the other hand, it's interesting you use the old Greek word persona, because you know, Julia was talking about the persona, Picasso's persona, the persona of various, and that in the 80s, you know, when you were doing your MFA, Holly, you were taught that you had to put yourself out there, otherwise you were going to sink, you know, as a celebrity. And I was talking about Art Basel and the celebrity value there. And now we've got the added factor of the social media, where you're not going into a gallery and presenting your own physical portfolio, putting it on somebody's desk. You're not.
Right.
You're just not.
Right.
And so, and but Julia used the word persona. Well, what does that word mean? Directly from the Greek, it's translated as mask. So it's a very interesting concept that, you know, it's a, almost a double mask, because you're manufacturing your celebrity. And then, of course, social media, you're not actually physically there for people to see who you really are, but you're making yourself somebody on the dual level. Richard, do we have to go to one more break? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, I am. And yes, we
okay. do. Let's go to one quick break, and then we get back from the break. We'll talk a little bit about how people can see the work, Holly's work, and how to get to know Holly a little bit better, and what the price points are, and if they're for sale, et cetera, at the gallery. Let's talk a little bit about the nuts and bolts when we get back from the break. Don't turn that down. Back in a minute. I'm speaking with Julia Rutherford Daly and Holly Hungett, our artist of the day, who's hanging at the Architectural Foundation Gallery right now. Don't turn that down. Welcome back. It's Elizabeth Stewart. And during the break, I learned from Holly that she's in a couple of really cool shows happening that you can see her. May 18th, she's opening at Westmont Ridley Tree, a group show there she was touring into. And then the Voice Gallery with the Abstract Art Collective at La Cumbre Plaza, is she's showing there as well, a juried show there. And what's so interesting is, you've got to go see the galleries in La Cumbre. There's now there's five associated galleries there. Started with one collective. And the Voices is, you know, obviously associated with a print publication, but it's got its own gallery there. And this is super interesting. So Julia, you were going to tell us a little bit about how people can see the work at the Architectural Foundation Gallery.
Definitely. So the gallery hours are Saturdays from 1 to 4 p.m. or by appointment, weekdays by appointment. There's more information on that on the website, which is www.afsb.org. I'd really recommend checking out the show, and Holly can maybe talk a little bit more about what is available, but all the works are for sale. I think some have already sold and they're indicated with a little red dot. But Holly, would you like to tell us a little bit about the work that is for sale, and then also the prints and the cards that are for sale too?
Right. Yeah. So I have a lot of different paintings. I have a series of nine. We were talking about the mini paintings, or just talked a little bit about it. They're even more abstracted. They're small on canvas. There's a series of nine. Three of those have sold. And then I have quite a few paintings, I think 19 other paintings in the gallery besides the nine mini paintings. And they're all for sale. I've sold quite a few pieces, but always hoping to, you know, sell a few more. I also have...
May I interrupt you? What are the price points?
So the small pieces, the mini pieces start at $125. And if you buy a series of three, you get a little break. And then the larger paintings, which range from about that size, $195 up to $450. I think that larger one is sold. So... I also have quite a few Giclée prints, and those are fine art reproductions. They are reproductions of my paintings that range in price from $20 for small ones up to $65. And I have a...
Excellent.
A what?
Excellent. Oh, I said excellent. Well, we've got to say goodbye. But Holly, thank you for joining us. And Julia Rutherford Daly from her car because her toddler's inside. She's been so patient talking with us all.